We've been discussing the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, specific to his encounters with demons. Last night it wasn't exactly a demon, but Navakuvira and Manigriva, and their certainly demoniac mentality that resulted in their being cursed, become trees, standing naked for 100 years of the demigods, and then Krishna delivering them. In their case, they went back to Kuvera's kingdom. Their position is demigods, or sons of the treasure of heaven. But they went back new, improved. They were pure devotees, fixed in consciousness of Krishna. No more of what they did to get themselves in that mess. By Krishna's kind association, and Krishna's upholding the word of Narada Muni. Such a nice transition, like startling in one sense, transcendentally sublime in another sense, from Krishna's conducting himself as he did with Mother Yashoda. We can see Krishna was reciprocating with the love of Mother Yashoda, not as a play actor, but as a transcendental exchange of love. He was controlled. Her love was so strong. He was controlled by her love. And so he was doing in a manner that was strengthen her love and nurture her love. And when that portion of the Leela was completed, he enjoyed, like a small child, pulling the wooden grinding mortar here and there. And then his eyes went upon the two Arjuna trees, and he remembered the words of Narada, and he fulfilled the words of Narada and delivered. So now comes Vatsasura, after the killing of Trinavarta is Vatsasura, and it's time for Krishna to herd the calves. This is a different stage of his life. If you remember, after the Trinavarta Leela, the elders of Gokul decided to move. So they moved to the other side of the Jamuna River. So now it's on the other side of the Jamuna River. And here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of where the Vrindavan pastimes begin. He gives this quick sequence from Mahavan, which is on the eastern side of the river Jamuna, or Gokul Mahavan. Here's the sequence: killing of Putana, breaking the cart, name-giving ceremony, crawling, that's the Shakatasura, Shakatasura, then name-giving, then crawling, walking, killing Trinavarta, first showing of the universal form, that's after Trinavarta, Leela, Mother Yashoda was feeding him, and she looked inside his mouth as he was about to be finished, and she was going to kiss his face, and she saw the universal form inside his mouth. Dancing for the elder gopis, buying fruit, pulling the calves' tails, eating dirt, showing of the universal form, stealing yogurt, Damodar Leela, being bound to the mortar, Yashoda calling the boys for lunch, and entering Vrindavan. So Vrindavan pastimes begin, and then he continues. In the same Kumara age, Swakalena, they begin herding the calves. So this is Gopastami. We just observe, it's a big festival in Vrindavan, Gopastami. the two, that's Krishna and Balaram, ended their Kumara period at the end of 4 years, though normally it ends after 5 years. There's another place in this 10th canto where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says specifically 3 years and 6 months. Here he's saying 4 years. In any case, in Vrindavan, they continued their Kumara period for 1.5 years, since the stealing of the calves by Brahma took place within this period as well. Brahmagat is in the Vrindavan town area, so it's on the, in the western side, in the Vrindavan town area, still during his Kumara period. In this way, Krishna and Balaram pass their Kumara in Vraja by engaging in activities of childish play. We're going to hear about their childish play. When Balaram and Krishna attained the age of Pauganda, while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. So that's a little summary of the ages and the pastimes and the places. So when they herded the calves, it was very close by. The commentary says the parents could call from their homes or could hear the boys from their homes, and still, so they were within close range. Both Krishna and Balaram, equipped with all kinds of playthings, and it lists some of them, flutes and canes and horns and veenas and balls and slings for throwing bilva and amalaki fruits a great distance, and other objects, played with other cowherd boys as they began to tend the small calves. So here they're imitating the calves. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would play on their flutes. Sometimes they would throw ropes and stones devised for getting fruits from the trees. Sometimes they would throw only stones. And sometimes, their ankle bells tinkling, they would play football with fruits like bale and amalaki. Sometimes they would cover themselves with blankets and imitate cows and bulls and fight with one another, roaring loudly. And sometimes they would imitate the voices of animals. In this way, they enjoyed sporting exactly like two ordinary human children. Their main goal was to wander about and play, using their flutes and other equipment. Herding calves was secondary. It's described that because they had such affection for the cows and the calves, and the calves had such affection for them, the calves were just, that herding of the calves was easy, because they just followed wherever Krishna went. So Krishna just had to play, and he loved to play, and his cowherd boyfriends, they loved to play with Krishna. Sometimes they would imitate the animals. I've seen a better picture than this one, but imitating the peacocks, jumping into the water like the frogs, running like the deer, hanging from trees like monkeys. They would just play and play and play. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would play upon their flutes, and the cows would stand with their ears erect, listening to Krishna's flute song. And the cowherd boys would stop in their tracks and just listen to the sound of Krishna's flute. Then comes the demon. So the scene is they're just children playing, small children playing. So Jiva Goswami describes Kamsa's mood as he sent Vatsasura to his death. Kamsa was thinking, simply by hearing Krishna's name causes my heart to tremble. By some trick, by some clever plan, he must be killed. Already I have tried plan after plan, each one more clever than the last. but all have failed. They were useless. As he thought in this way, Kamsa walked out of the palace with one of his spies and asked him, "According to what you have seen, whom does Krishna love the most?" The spy reported, "Lord Krishna, Lord, I think Krishna is most filled with love for his calves." Kamsa then ordered, "Now return to your home." Kamsa then turned to another attendant, "Summon Vatsasura. With his great power, he places even the demigod Indra in distress. He makes Indra appear as insignificant as a drop of water." Because many others were surrounding him, Kamsa had whispered these words of praise. Vatsasura soon arrived, and Kamsa greeted him as if a son, "Dear child, Vatsasura, please go to Nanda's village of Vraja. Approach Nanda's small son as he herds the calves. Then yourself, assuming the form of a calf, attack Nanda's son." Affirming his obedience by saying, "As the king commands, so I will act," Vatsasura went to Jamuna's banks. So the scene is set. One day, while Rama and Krishna, along with their playmates, were tending calves in the bank of the river Jamuna, another demon arrived there, desiring to kill them. Jiva Goswami adds, "When as he herded calves, Vraja's prince Krishna saw him, Krishna thought, Vatsasura was like a poisonous snake." Krishna immediately understood the mentality of Vatsasura. As he understands the mentality of the devotee, he certainly understands the mentality of the demon. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that the demon had assumed the form of a calf and entered among the groups of other calves, he pointed out to Baladev, "Here is another demon." Now there's a very nice dialogue which I had intended to print out for you or read out to you. And it's a dialogue between Krishna and Balaram where Krishna is with his eyes gesturing. See that one? He's new. Do you see anything different about him? I don't feel good about what I see. He's a demon. Oh, we have to be very careful. He's come to try to kill us. So they have this whole dialogue about making a plan. And Balaram, Krishna said, but he's assumed the form of a calf. And people will criticize. And Balaram said, once they understand he's a demon, they won't criticize. Go ahead. Oh, here it is. Look at that. Observing Vatsasura accompanying the calves as they sniffed the sweet aromas as they wandered among the grass, Vraja's prince, Krishna, said to his elder brother Balaram, "Big brother, which calf is that? I don't know that calf. That calf was not with us in the morning." Balaram replied, "Indeed, brother, that calf was not here. It was not here." Krishna then said, "Tell me about the calf." Balaram, "I think that calf is dangerous." "Older brother, is that calf a demon?" "Yes, he must be. He stares at us with hate-filled eyes." Krishna, "If you command, I will kill this demon." Balaram said, "I fear people will criticize you, saying you have killed the calf and thereby committed a sin." Krishna, "If at the moment of his death this creature manifests his true original form as a demon, then no one will criticize me." Balaram, "O crusher of the hate-filled demons, slowly approach this treacherous demon." Thereafter, Krishna caught the demon by the hind legs and tail, twirled the demon's whole body very strongly until the demon was dead, and threw him on top of a kapita tree, which then fell down along with the body of the demon who had assumed a great form. It was kapita tree because they wanted some fruits. He picked a special fruit tree. Save him the trouble. There's Vatsasura on top of the kapita tree. So Krishna had approached the demon as if he didn't understand the demon's intentions, and then he caught him by the hind legs, twirled him around till the demon was dead. There's his demon face. What does it say here? Vatsasura?
Killing.
And same down here? Well, it's the same painting, just one's in color and one isn't. Oh. Krishna killed the demon in such a way as to get the kapita fruits to fall, so he and Balaram, the other boys, could take advantage of the opportunity to eat them. Krishna is very practical. Upon seeing the dead body of the demon, all the cowherd boys exclaimed, "Well done, Krishna! Very good! Very good! Thank you!" In the upper planetary system, all the demigods were pleased, and therefore they showered flowers on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After killing the demon, Krishna and Balaram finished their breakfast in the morning. And while continuing to take care of the calves, they wandered here and there. Now some detail, because I didn't get to it, is the evening before, Krishna met with the cowherd boys and said, "Let's go early to herd the calves." He liked the calves so much. "Let's not eat breakfast at home, but let's have our mothers make breakfast for us and take it with us into the forest." So they all made that arrangement. So after Vatsasura was killed early in the morning, and then they sat down and had breakfast. This slide should be at the very beginning. Krishna's daily business here in this material world was to kill the Duskritis. This did not hamper his daily affairs, for it was routine work. While he tended the calves on the bank of the river Jamuna, two or three incidents took place every day. And although these were serious, killing the demons one after another appeared to be daily routine work. Thus, Krishna killed the calf Vatsasura. So now the previous life, Garga Samhita reference. In his previous life, Vatsasura was a great demon whose name was Pramila and was the son of Mura. You know about Mura, right? The Mura demon? Narakasura. The Mura demon was the one that was in the moat. And he was protecting Narakasura's palace. So Mura had a son. Anyway, after conquering the demigods, he entered Vasishtha Muni's ashram and saw a cow named Nandini. Desiring that cow, the demon transformed himself into a brahmana and begged for the beautiful cow. As Vasishtha, who had divine vision, stood silent, the cow spoke. Sri Nandini said, "You are a demon, Mura's son." And he assumed the form of a Brahman to steal the sage's cow, therefore, a wicked-hearted one, now you become a calf. The great demon, that was Mura's son, that once became a calf, he circumambulated Vasishtha. And the cow bowed down and said, "Please save me." The cow said, "Oh, great demon, at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, when you go among many calves, you will attain liberation." Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his evaluation of Vatsasura and the killing of Vatsasura. Vatsasura represents a childish mentality, mischievous and too easily influenced by bad association. So that mentality gives rise to a type of greediness for sense gratification through which one becomes absorbed in materialism. Vatsasa represents evils that are peculiar to boyhood. The neophyte is extremely susceptible to such evils. They can only be eliminated by the mercy of Krishna. If one engages in Krishna's service, they will be completely eradicated at an early stage. Now here's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, some points that he says we should understand from this Leela. Excuse the long text here, but who can summarize Bhakti Siddhanta otherwise? There is an English proverb that sowing of wild oats is inevitable at a young age. The term Puritanism was originally coined to express the protest of boys and young men against any undue curtailment of the scope of enjoyment that should be regarded as permissible to them. Boys and young men claim the right to be merry and frolicsome. There's nothing objectionable, and much of that is of positive value in the display of these juvenile qualities. If the attempt be made to stifle this innocent play of the boyish nature under the impression that it is an exhibition of sensuousness and for that reason it is harmful, as harmful as similar conduct on the part of grown-up persons, the result is not assurance, but discouragement of juvenile innocence. This is Bhaktisiddhanta analyzing puritanical view. Stifle that kind of play. Be pure in a somewhat artificial way. So, merrymaking, childhood, childish frivolity is not in itself bad. That's his point. And then second is, the only way to stop them being misled is to get them attracted to Krishna. He writes, "There are indeed black sheep, and these should not be allowed to taint the whole flock. And for this purpose, caretakers, with full sense of their delicate responsibility, are required to keep watch over them for ensuring the innocence of boyhood and youth without killing their joys. But with every precaution, it has been found impossible to attain this double purpose. The scriptures say that it is not in the power of man to ensure the immunity of boys and girls from the blight of sensuousness except by means of service of Krishna." Point three. The material ideal of restricting children from enjoyments in youth, which they will be allowed in adulthood, is corrupt. I didn't include the text, but he has a whole explanation of that. It's not okay for child, but it's okay for adults. Sensuousness with adults is okay. And then he really doesn't like this one. Spurious brahmachari ideal is the same. Material morality is of no help. The spurious brahmacharya ideal, as misconceived by its worldly supporters, embodies this puritanic outlook of brahmacharya. Puritanic outlook. The scriptures indeed enjoin that everyone should serve Godhead from the womb. This is the real meaning of brahmacharya. The ascetic practices that have come to attach themselves to the conception were interpolated into the scriptures in order to ensure worldly values by this form of the empiric method. The scheme requires that the laws of the growth of the physical and mental bodies should be observed and followed. Nature is regarded as the kind mother who favors only those of her children who cultivate the filial habit of prying into her secrets. What a way to say it, huh? Nature is supposed to be unable to avoid divulging her secrets to her inquisitive children, although she is well aware that her children will exploit this knowledge for troubling her by harnessing her to their service. In other words, it is also assumed to be the duty of the kind mother to consent to put herself in chains in order to minister to the sensuous appetite of her worthier children. Nature is assumed to be able to do good to her children only by submitting to be the victim of their lust. What a way to analyze mentalities of people. Morality is a valued commodity only on the plane of delusion, but has no locus standi in the plane where the conditions of existence are perfect. Point number five. We should not sentimentally think that the playful child does not need training. Of course, this is from the Harmonist, and it's much longer. Bhaktisiddhanta's association is awesome and instructive. Here, I put all of this because there are some people that have children, and some people are children, and some people behave like children. And it's nice to see his way of guiding the childish, playful mentality that can be harmful or can be nice, beneficial, and how to view tendencies that come from children and lift them in the proper way. There's another section that I've read several times where he says that something he really objects to is a view that some people have that young boys should be brahmacharya so that they will become strong, so that in their adult life, that's number three, when their sensuousness tendencies, now they have real strong capacity to do those sensuous tendencies that should be curbed when they're young. And that's why it's okay when they're older, but not okay when they're young. He really doesn't like that one. But it was too long, it didn't fit. Okay, I have to watch the clock. See if there's any. I can make some quick summary comments here. Childish mentality, mischievous, too easily influenced by bad association, giving rise to greediness for sense gratification, and then leading into materialism. So Krishna can protect such tendencies. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta had his way of saying it. So the tendency to serve Krishna is something that should be addressed, encouraged, awakened early as possible. Some of us didn't start Krishna consciousness till much later, so it makes it more difficult. But at whatever point it's recognized, curbing frivolous and then in turn sensuous nature is checked by the mood of service. Krishna helps that way. Any questions? Okay, yes.
Ramaraj, I'm trying to absorb, especially in the points that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj gave on children education, is quite deep and
yes,
and very important too and relevant. Especially that part that he says that to have those two things, basically disciplining and at the same time allow that playful nature and encourage that, and those two things almost is impossible to do without having the training in Krishna, engaging them in the service of Krishna. It's quite an important point, you know, for relevant for parents and teachers to understand and come up with the proper balance and training for the kids. I was appreciating that very much, and I wonder if something that you can, you know, elaborate a little bit.
Well, he says it right here. I'll read it again. Indeed, there are black sheep, and these should not be allowed to taint the whole flock. And for this purpose, caretakers with full sense of their delicate responsibility are required to keep watch over them, for ensuring the innocence of boyhood and youth without killing their joys. But with every precaution, it has been found impossible to attain this double purpose. The solution is attention needs to go to the spirit of serving Krishna. So when there's the spirit of serving Krishna, the lightheartedness and the joyfulness is given its proper space or place. And otherwise, the natural tendency of children to be lighthearted and frivolous and playful without that connection to Krishna, especially in bad association, the black sheep example, can, you know, take the innocent children into a bad place. It's just like trying to check the black sheep and let the nice children be nice children. So the real solution is Krishna consciousness. And that's the challenge of educators, it's the challenge of parents, as they wish their child to be like happy, wholesome children. At the same time, not go into dark areas with that playfulness, because it can go. So it's the valve, the checkpoint is bhakti, Krishna bhakti. So how to nurture that? That's and then each child has his or her nature, and seeing his or her nature, encourage the Krishna bhakti within the child. That's the teacher's role. Yes.
Sometimes you see the children, the youth that you have trained stray away from Krishna consciousness at some point of time, you know.
Yes, it happens.
And I mean, we can say that maybe some of their own, some nature is coming, expressing itself at that time period. So should we just let them be that way, because they have gone out of our hands, you know, they are not within our training circumstances. They have gone into their lives and they are doing whatever they are doing. And
a short answer, because it's now 7:30, is a few things. Internally, don't judge. Externally project the fact that you don't judge. In fact, you continue to accept the person as a person without necessarily, I mean, without having to feel, oh, I approve of the behaviors. But, you know, the person is someone important to you, you know, as an adult to that young person who's gone away from practices. And just, you know, the door's open and come on in any time you want. But let them know that when they come in, it's Krishna. You know, a doorway to Krishna's house or Krishna's life with Krishna. And that's, you know, you don't have to stop being who you are, nor impose upon them something they're feeling they don't want to be, but still, you know, accepting of them as a person and showing kindness. Because deep inside, the training that has been received is indelible. I mean, how does Krishna see such a thing? And so see as Krishna sees. It's never lost. That's something that's more their nature than this other, the deviation thing. That's not their nature. Like that. Yes.
Just a quick comment and like seeking confirmation. Something that I was thinking as like reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's thing is that part of being a child is that one is very egocentric, and that's how this, even in adults, it seems to manifest itself in bad association, that seeking attention and being self-absorbed. Yeah.
What was the last part?
Being self-absorbed, egocentric.
That's what makes one susceptible to bad association? That was your point?
Or get influenced by bad association very quickly. Because we seem to see that like in devotees also. Like one who has that egocentricity too much, then a little association of some other kind brings out this childish frivolity and childishness and that kind of behavior.
I don't see the connection with the bad association. That's not even your main point, though, is it?
No.
Okay.
The main point is just that egocentric behavior as a child, or that is at the core. So it comes out when.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, so the frivolity and the egocentrism are connected. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Oh yeah. Child psychology. Yes.
Hi, Krishna, Swami. At least from doing teaching with quite young children, say when children are about 9 or close to 10, then I particularly notice that there's a shift in behavior that even in the classroom situation, it's the focus shifts for children to, like a girl and a boy, to be dialoguing in the class a little bit even beyond what's required for the discussion in the about, let's say, if I'm teaching Krishna book. So I found myself analyzing it that some of it, at least, well, some of it is, I'm thinking, learned from, you know, in the regular school system, how there's that kind of, I don't know, mentality that the children are surrounded by. But in the classroom situation, I do actually find that it is actually very delicate to break up, however innocent it is, but it is a definite shift in behavior that's a need for, or I don't know if it's a need, but definitely it's rearing its head more, the dialogue between girls and boys, even beyond what's required in the classroom situation. So, what would be the way to draw the attention of the child to, in a positive way, that that dialoguing isn't, what would be the word?
Appropriate.
Appropriate, and also something that should be continued and perpetuated.
That's a nice question. Children education is a unending, voluminous topic. Well, the first thought I have is each child is different. So a cookie-cutter approach, I don't think would be so suitable. And it's not just a matter, second point is, it's not just a matter of getting the right behavior instead of the wrong behavior while you're watching, because the tendency is going to come out later when you're not watching. So that's not a solution either. Like classroom behavior isn't a solution. So the third is then to, in a relationship with a particular child, is two things. What is it that attracts them most to Krishna, and encourage that? And second is, what are their, do something that will strengthen their appreciation for having a relationship with Krishna, or doing that which is pleasing to Krishna, or doing things in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. Now, child specific. So that requires a very close relationship with the child to know where those buttons are, or where those sensitivities or natures are. And otherwise, a teacher can't do that. Without a strong teacher-student relationship, it's a frustration point that Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking about. The teacher has to know the child has to know the teacher cares and knows me, and then they'll let them know. You know, and not necessarily saying, this is my button, this is what's important to me, but you know, through the relationship, their guard will be down and they'll indicate. And then it's just a relationship encouraging that. to stay to infidelity with that which is pleasing to Krishna, instead of the extending the frivolousness into this other area, the inappropriate, and going towards the edge of the road area. That's a short, and I'm looking at the clock, and I really have to go. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.